It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, February 10th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. A national group called Defund Planned Parenthood is organizing rallies across the country on Saturday. Carbondale resident Maura Masters is organizing a countermarch here in town and talked about it with KDNK's Amy Hedden Marsh.
Maura Masters, you've organized another march.
It's a march to support Planned Parenthood. And it's in opposition to the national Defund Planned Parenthood rallies that are going on across the country the same day.
Talk about the Defund Planned Parenthood movement.
Well, I don't know that much about it. I know that they are primarily pro-life and that their agenda against Planned Parenthood is that they sell body parts amongst other, you know, grotesque and untrue things.
Sell body parts?
After abortions.
Okay, so yeah. Body parts of fetuses.
Yeah, aborted fetuses, which is, you know, disturbing and untrue. That's their agenda, I think, basically. And they'd like to defund Planned Parenthood because, you know, those clinics in some states offer abortions. They're not government funded unless it's the health of the mother or rape. What they really do, Planned Parenthood, in my opinion, is provide health care and health care options to the underserved and the disenfranchised women who otherwise can't afford it. You know, in these times of sort of chaotic insurance coverage and expensive insurance coverage, it's nice for women to have a choice, have an option. They provide women's care, you know, like monthly exams, breast exams, pelvic exams, all sorts of services that women, you know, rely on. I myself found out I was pregnant with my two children at the Planned Parenthood here in the Valley. Why would you take any kind of health care away from somebody who needs it and who can't afford it otherwise?
Why are you marching in Carbondale and not at the Glenwood Springs Planned Parenthood Clinic?
Well, you know, the clinic's open that day, and we don't want to cause any chaos, to be quite honest, and they've asked us not to. You know, so we'd like to honor what they would like and what their needs are.
Maura Masters, I'm wondering if you think that a march like this will have some kind of an effect.
Well, you know, I think the Women's March obviously had an effect. It got people out of their chairs and moving. And even if you weren't political before, you've become it now, and for, you know, better or worse. So we're doing these marches, Alice, you know, my online magazine, alicethemag.com, because we just want to create awareness. And so, you know, it really is our intention that if two people come, 2,000 people come. It makes no difference because we're creating awareness about women's issues. And in this case, it's women's health issues. And we'll keep going.
What do you mean by that?
We'll have our voices heard. And, you know, you can use Alice as a vehicle to write and, you know, express your opinions to a certain audience. Or you can get out into your community and you can do work that inspires others to get out and do the same.
If you had the ear of state representatives and senators and then Senator Bennett, Senator Cory Gardner, what would you say to them about this issue?
I'd say to respect their constituents and to pick up the phone. And, you know, evidently there is a march planned in Denver at Cory Gardner's office. You know, we have an opinion, we have rights, and, you know, take care of us. We take care of you, certainly.
When you say take care of us, what do you mean by that?
I mean, take a broad look of what's going on in our government. And with the recent nomination of Gorsuch as a Supreme Court judge, would they support or be against some kind of alteration to Roe v. Wade, which was put into place so many years ago that I can't believe that it would become a discussion again. But evidently, it will be.
Where is the march? What time?
It is Saturday, the 11th, and it starts at 9 a.m. at the parking lot of the GOAT, which is at the corner of 133 and Cowan. And we'll meet there, get our signs and banners organized, and then just peacefully march down the Crystal River Trail to the roundabout and back again. And I have a permit, a parade permit, and the police are aware of it. And we're hoping it's just going to be a movement of awareness.
Maura Masters, editor of alicethemag.com. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks a lot, Amy.
In Glenwood Springs, marchers will meet at Sayre Park on South Grand Avenue at noon tomorrow, Saturday. Sue Lum was a decades-long advertising manager and columnist for the Aspen Times and an outspoken champion for her town. She died in late January at the age of 80. And this week's news brief features Aspen Times reporter Scott Condon, who knew Lum for 25 years and wrote a memorial piece about her for the paper.
Well, Scott Condon of the Aspen Times, thanks very much for joining me for this week's news brief.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
On the 30th of January, you wrote an article about Sue Lum, who was a character, a real character, who represented sort of the old Aspen, who died in late January, who died on January 29th. It seems to me that her death, by the way that you wrote about it in the article, is sort of an end of an era for Aspen. Your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly it was the end of an era for the Aspen Times. Sue joined the Times in the mid-60s, as I recall. And, you know, she was a longtime ad director. And at the same time that Mary Hayes was the editor, and Bill Dunaway, of course, was the publisher and did some of the editing. They have all died within the last, I don't know, 4 years or so. And, you know, they guided that paper for a long, long time.
Did you know Sue Lum?
Yeah. I started at the Aspen Times in 1987, so Sue worked full-time until January 2012.
In 25 words or less, describe your impression of Sue Lum.
Sue was very outspoken, very knowledgeable, did her homework. She was passionate about Aspen, and she was a very true and loyal person to people that she liked.
How did she influence your life, working with her at the paper and knowing, you know, what her history was with the paper?
In the old Aspen Times building, the editorial department was on kind of the second floor, and the ad office was on the bottom floor. And Sue was not shy about coming up and talking to reporters or editors about views on various stories, particularly on Aspen City government stories. She was spot on. She did. I'd be willing to bet of all her columns, probably a third were on Aspen civic issues at least. And she was glued to the TV during council meetings and really did a wonderful job, I mean, a sensational job of studying Aspen issues and educating herself. She was the envy of reporters, really, when she would make the time to dive into a lot of issues that reporters who were doing general assignment and doing several different stories at once didn't have the luxury of diving into the detail that she did.
Scott Condon, have you noticed any changes in the feel of the paper since 2012, since she retired from the office, and now that Sue Lum is not with us anymore?
She started writing her column in 1988, and she obviously had a lot of knowledge about Aspen for the prior two-plus decades before that. So we're talking irreplaceable institutional knowledge. I don't know what the plan is for finding a new columnist, but you just can't replace what Sue gave the paper in that regard. The loss of her column is a big deal.
How difficult was it to write that memorial piece about her? It was very good.
Thank you. You know, I've had a few people comment, gee, that must have been hard to write. You know, while it's personally sad about Sue's passing, it was an easy article to write in the sense that I was comfortable approaching people. A lot of times when a person dies and we do something beyond the family-supplied obituary, hey, it's tough to call the family when they're grieving and say, you know, how will you best remember this person that just died? I mean, that's a very unpleasant thing to do. And it's not that it was pleasant to do in this case, but I was comfortable because I knew many of the people that I approached, and, you know, we all had this kind of shared loss of Sue, and people were more than willing to share their memories of her. This was, by our standards, a pretty lengthy story, and I used maybe half of what I collected. And that's always an unfortunate thing because there were a lot of people that were very cooperative and gave me some really great memories of Sue, and I just couldn't fit it all in.
Scott Condon, thanks very much for writing the memorial piece about Sue Lum in the Aspen Times, and thanks for joining me for the news brief.
Yeah, thanks. I hope the story gave at least a glimpse into the kind of person she was.
That does it for this week's news brief on KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
And you can find Scott Condon's memorial to the late Sue Lum at aspentimes.com. More than half the world's drinking water is filtered through mountaintops, and if the planet keeps getting warmer, clean water could be harder to come by. Erica Lattis reports.
As Congress moves to take the brakes off clean water and climate pollution protections, a new study published in the journal Nature shows water from the Rocky Mountains and mountains around the globe are threatened by climate change. Nathan Sanders, the report's co-author, says nearly half the world's drinking water is filtered through mountain forests, plants, and soils. He says biodiversity increasingly is at risk as the planet gets warmer.
Over the entire Rocky Mountain region, many people live at the bases of mountains, and much of the water generated in those mountains, flows throughout the western U.S.
Sanders' team gathered data in the Rocky Mountains, New Zealand, Canada, Australia, Europe, Japan, and Patagonia. He says the results showed changes in temperature impacts biodiversity primarily through changes in soil nutrient levels, and warns the effects on mountains' ability to provide people with clean water could be profound. Scientists used mountain elevation as a stand-in for temperature change over decades, the lifetime for many trees, a timeline that isn't easy to recreate in a greenhouse. Sanders says the results show a warming planet is likely to have large, long-term, and probably irreversible effects on natural ecosystems.
We rely on the plants and animals and microbes and soils that live in those mountains, and so we have to do everything in our power to protect that biodiversity to ensure that mountain ecosystems provide the services that so much of humanity relies on.
In addition to reversing rules to protect water downstream of coal production, last week the U.S. House of Representatives also took steps to overturn the BLM's recent rule limiting methane waste on public lands. Methane, the key component of natural gas, is more than 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at trapping heat in the atmosphere. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
The Roaring Fork School District closed its high schools yesterday and placed all elementary and middle schools in lockout after the FBI notified Carbondale police of an anonymous threat of school violence by a teenager with an IP address in Carbondale. The Aspen School District placed all schools in lockout status. Lockout means all exterior doors to the school are locked and monitored, but classes and activities are held as usual. By 1:15 yesterday afternoon, the restrictions had been lifted. Carbondale Police Chief Gene Schilling says that, according to the FBI, the threat may have been spam. Law enforcement officials say the threats were similar to other recent school threats nationwide. The local threat is under investigation, and schools are in session today.